And welcome to the Dark Side of Soul podcast. This is Joe.
This is Sean.
Thank you for joining us today. We have let's do a quick show about cults. Then that started getting big, and so, okay, let's concentrate on one cult. And even that's we're starting off with the big one. We're starting off with Unification Church, otherwise known as the Moonies.
Derogatorily.
They were really part of the landscape in the 1970s. They're part of the whole, there all these new agey cults were coming out at the time. The Hare Krishnas. Who else?
The People's Temple was already big by the 70s.
Yeah.
That was towards their end.
All the people at the airports handing out stuff. You make fun of an airplane. That's what it is.
Well, we can blame George Harrison for making the Hare Krishnas popular, maybe.
That is true.
But still,
he was sued for that song, and he did not write any music for a long time after that. He was so crushed.
That's right.
I know. Because if you don't know, it's My Sweet Lord, and it turned out it was pretty much the same as the Motown song. Was the Motown song "You Saw Mine"? It's pretty much the same song if you listen to them back to back. And
All Things Must Pass is a great album. All the other songs in that are great.
Yeah,
the Ballad of Sir Frankie Crisp, great stuff in that album.
Yeah, George Harrison, hit or miss. He did some amazing songs, and then some songs that are like "Got My Mind Set on You."
It's gonna take time.
Oh God! Now that song's in my head. Oh no!
Gonna take money.
I need a purge. I need a purge. Okay. All right. Anyway. Okay, so just a little bit of overview about the Unification Church. Now, keep in mind, okay, it's controversial that we're going into what we are going to call cults.
Don't forget our introduction,
I know. Okay, we're going to do our introduction. Yes, we also run the Dark Side of Soul Ghost Walk right here in Seoul. You can find out more at darksideofsoul.com. You can also book a tour easily. If you get some friends, you can get discounts. You can also follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/darksideofsoul, where we regularly host watch parties, which Sean does with the horror movies. And people grab their pizza and popcorn and hang around in the chat room while they watch classic horror movies. You learn something new. Also, Instagram.com/darksideofsoul, I think it is. Just search for Dark Side of Soul on Instagram.
We're all there.
Yeah. And Sean, are you still collecting stories for your book?
I am, yeah. So this is something to say quick. I'm currently collecting stories of alleged true supernatural experiences that people have had in Korea. So if you have had one, send us a message. Probably the easiest way to contact us is through Facebook. Just send us a message and then say, I have an experience, I'd like to share it. And then I will get in touch with you directly. And then we can converse about that through email. If the story is interesting enough, then I'll put it together and get it in the book that we're hoping to put out maybe within a year.
Who are you going to call? Sean Morrissey.
What?
I don't know. I'm just like, is there something strange? Contact us now.
Who are you going to call? Morrissey.
All right. So first off, yes, it is controversial that we're going to talk about cults or new religions, you could say. People have said, there's some people in some parts of the spectrum that say, well, isn't most any religion a cult if you think about it? And then people on the other end of the spectrum that kind of like, you're being harsh on people's belief systems. The term cult, it is quite malleable, you could say.
I think so.
We're just going to concentrate on, we've just noted that South Korea just has a, is the home ground for a lot of new religions, new cults. And I've been wanting to explore this because I've tried to bring this up with academic groups, but you know, they kind of look down on this. But a lot of what we do, academics look down on. I mean, people don't look into ghost stories and stuff as very academic. So we're kind of like the guys in Ghostbusters. We're kind of rejected by academia, so we just kind of go off on our own.
I'm Venkman. If we're calling who we are.
Oh my God! Then who?
You can
am
be
I?
Tully. You can be Rick Moranis.
Yeah. I might. Anyway, I was throwing that analogy out there. I want to explore this more and maybe find, is there something in the meta history and meta culture that kind of makes this a good Korea, South Korea is particularly a good spawning ground for these types of organizations. And are there other parts of Korean society that echo this? And the more I do this, the more I'm finding stuff out. So we might come across as a little harsh on the Unification Church, which is no longer called the Unification Church, which we'll go about to later on. But like most influential organizations in history, it's not that black and white. It's nuanced. It's complicated. You could say they've done some good things and they've done some downright evil things. But what's fascinating is they're kind of in the background of a lot of history. They're kind of like the right wing religious Forrest Gump, and that they're involved in a lot of stuff that you don't know about.
Shaking hands with JFK.
Yeah, that. And it might come across as lots of conspiracy, but this is all public record. In fact, that's a lot. A lot of this is on Wikipedia. And in New York Times, this is just all collected from the public record.
Yeah, there are a lot of documentaries on YouTube. I think you just search Unification Church Korea, you'll get a ton of short documentaries, longer ones, hour-long documentaries, news clips and whatnot.
And what's just chilling is very likely the Unification Church has touched your life. In some respect or another, you know of it. You know it. You know one of its organizations. You might know people that are part of it. You don't know. Possibly they don't even know they're part of it. That's the funny thing about this. The history of the Unification Church kind of mirrors the history of other chaebols in Korean history. I would direct you to my other podcast, the Seoul Podcast. We do a two-parter on the rise of Samsung. And
excellent episode.
And we point on there, it runs like a cult. The inside of Samsung runs like a cult, and how North Korea runs like a cult.
Oh, personality cult, sure.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
We're finding this.
Yeah, digging into it. So one thing, just quick, I think maybe we'll talk just briefly about how people differentiate cult and religion. Like you brought it up just there at the beginning. There's one thing that always strikes me is that people say cults won't let you leave. You're not allowed to leave a cult. And if you leave it, then you're ostracized. And in a lot of other cases, you might end up drinking the Kool-Aid, which is a term that comes from a cult, the People's Temple. But apostasy has been part of established religions for hundreds and hundreds of years. And there are still places in the world where apostasy, leaving an established religion, is illegal. And in the Spanish Inquisition, apostasy was a big part of how people were considered against the church. Now, they weren't considered heretics. Apostates and heretics were differentiated, but especially for the Jews of the time, the Jews, especially the Spanish Jews, if they were considered apostates, and I'm talking about the Marano Jews, as apostates, yeah, they were often punished. And as I recall, the form of punishment was death by fire. So
purification
through. Yeah, I have to go and look back through my studies and books and whatnot on the Spanish Inquisition. But apostasy has been a part of established religion. So that's where the
nobody
line gets blurred.
Nobody expects that.
Mm.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
That's right. That's right. I want that on a shirt. No one expects Dark Side of Soul. We have to opt that out, and we have to steal that.
We'll work on that. You'll find, I mean, a lot of people point out the obvious. A lot of established world religions could have been considered cults at the time in the early stages.
Yeah. Just think how powerful they were. And a lot of these cults are massively powerful, mm-hmm. at least on the social stage, if not on a broader national stage.
Modern cults usually have a central messianic figure, especially Christian cults tend to have the messianic figure claims themselves to be the second coming of Christ. There's some type of extreme devotion that is required of members and a level of secrecy. The outsiders, and it's kind of an insider's club. And that's one way cults bring people in is they make you feel like you're part of something that is secret and you're part of a family, and leaving the cult is leaving the family. And to the point where they consider the cult's family is stronger than your genetic family or the family you married into. Things like that. And they'll try to control different parts of people's personal lives, their financial, their sexual lives, to every detail. And in the Unification Church case, down to who you marry.
Right. And isn't that a fact? You're probably going to go into it, but isn't that that's one of the key elements of the church? Marriage, right?
Mm-hmm. Family is the central. That's the seed of a lot of the teachings of the church. A lot of it comes, anything it does, it all comes down to family. Unification comes from within the family. Hmm. So at this point, the moon, they're also known, as I mentioned before, they're known as the Moonies, pejoratively known, I'll call them the Moonies. why? Because it was started by Moon Sung Myung. His name is Moon. His family were Confucianists living in what is now North Korea. He was born in 1920, and they were converted. They became Christian, and he started off as a Sunday school teacher, evangelical, and then he's actually involved a little bit in the Communist Party after World War II. But then he ran afoul of a few things, went down and started proselytizing to the South, came back to Pyongyang to proselytize in 1946, got arrested and sent to a labor camp on charges of spying. And he was only released during the Korean War in 1950 when Allied troops took over the camp. And he fled to the South down to Busan.
He kept going. He's like, I'm getting as far south as I can go.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and you said there were charges of heresy from the Presbyterian Church. And he was establishing his own thing. And so, in 1954, he founded this first church called the Holy Spirit Association for the Unification of World Christianity, the HSAUWC, or in Korean, the Tongilgyo. Mm. Keep that name in mind, Tongilgyo. You will find that a lot in what we're going to talk about. But the term Moony was established in the American media in 1974. It became such a popularized term that even Sung Myung Moon himself used that term to describe himself and other members. But in the 80s and 90s, they've started to see that as being used as a silly pejorative. It was kind of, I mean, the word Moony. What do you think? When I hear Moony, I think of a moon pie. I think of, it sounds lunacy. Luna. Get it?
I know people whose family name is Moony.
Ah, yeah, right, that too. But it kind of has negative connotations. So they're actively campaigning against the use of the name, trying to make it kind of a pejorative, kind of a discriminatory term. Didn't succeed. We still call them Moonies. because we still can't call him Unification Church. So anyway, he started off by writing his first book, Divine Principle. Divine Principle. I'm not speaking well today. Wonbon was the first manuscript. It was lost in the North Korea during the war. So came up with another one called Wonni Hesol, or the explanation of the divine principle. So if I lost the first one, you know, here's what it said. It's
part
kind
two.
It's kind of like the foundation of the Mormons.
What's his name? Joseph Smith.
And how he got all these special scriptures, special tablets, and only because he wore magic glasses, he was the only one who was able to read what was on them. It kind of feels like that. Sorry for any followers, but I'm sorry, we're going to offend people today. We're going to get on the hit list of the Unification Church by doing this.
I'm fine with that.
I don't know, man. We're going to go cover how powerful these guys are. I'm not sure if we're going to be fine with that.
Well, I live in the Yukon. So, yeah, I live in the Yukon.
What, University of Connecticut? Okay.
No, the Yukon.
Okay.
The northern territories of Canada. That's where I live. I'm very, very far away.
So the second book was published in 1957, and then an exposition of the divine principle, which is the main book everyone knows, was done in 1966, co-written with one of his disciples, Hyo Won-eu. Now, he started his church in Busan during his refugee times. And so, and the first growth was the original Unification Church, the Holy Spirit Association for the Unification of World Christianity. Started in 1954, lasted to 1994. Founded on May 1st, on May Day.
May Day.
It's kind of funny that an anti-communist organization was founded on May Day. Mm. Expanded rapidly inside South Korea. And you're like, wow, that must have been really influential. But some scholarly work that was done in the 60s found that it spread rapidly through pressure of friends and family. It's just like, oh, well, you should do this. We've seen how family members can really pressure other family members to go against their own well-being in many cases. You could blame Confucianism for it if you want, Neo-Confucianism. But anyway, it originally spread through family and friends, got really big, then started expanding through East Asia, Japan, Philippines, Taiwan. Then 1959 started establishing missionaries in Washington, D.C., New York City, and in California, where it really took hold, surprise, surprise, in San Francisco. Mm. In the San Francisco Bay Area, started off 1971, 500 members. 2 years later, they had a few thousand members in all 50 states. Mm. And this is where when a lot of the hippies of the 60s were just trying to find themselves spiritually, and a lot of them were experimenting with drugs and spirituality. And so a lot of these new religion cults became outlets for people who are spiritually, had no spiritual roots, spiritually lost, and wanted to find a family, wanted to find a community for themselves. And this was one way to do it. And the Moonies, this is when they were called the Moonies. I'm just going to say the Moonies. The Moonies were really known for enthusiasm, their passion, their ability to raise money. Moon started seeing how big it was getting in the U.S. and used an excuse. He moved in 1974 to the U.S. And he actually gave a series of speeches, including one in Madison Garden in 74, two in Yankee Stadium in 76, and one at the Washington Monument, which attracted 300,000 people. So it's getting larger. Mm. And went back in Korea. He had one of the world's largest gatherings of 1.2 million people in Yeouido in 1975.
It's amazing.
Yeouido is kind of Seoul's home for large religion.
Yeah. Yeah. In that area, Yeouido, Yeongdongpo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a lot of big churches in that area.
Yeah.
At least there. Yeah.
Yeah. It also started spreading through Eastern Europe and South America. And then after the fall of the Soviet Union in the 90s, it started spreading in Russia and former communist nations. Now, you might say, Joe, because that's my name, what is their thought? What did they believe? What are their ideologies? Well, I'll try to sum it up the best I can. Like a lot of these new Christian-based religions, there's got to be a Messiah, a second coming of Jesus. It's got to believe in it's founded on a new text, which is like the third testament. You have the Old Testament, the New Testament, and the newest testament, I guess. The brand new testament,
right? Glossy, the new one.
Yeah, and we see lots of churches, including the one that was involved in the big coronavirus thing, that the leader considers themselves the new coming of Christ. Moon said that about himself too. But the belief is this, though, that they believe that Christ's mission was originally to start humankind's new sinless race. And before he was able to get married and start a family, it was cut short by being executed. So Christ's crucifixion was not meant to be. It was an accident because, yeah, so strange. God is infallible.
That's strange. Yeah, I always found that a really interesting thing. Now, I'm an apostate myself. I'm definitely a heathen and a heretic. I left the Catholic Church a long time ago. I don't believe in any of that stuff. But the very idea that that whole story, like in the Garden of is it Gethsemane, mm-hmm. where he, Jesus, begs God to find another way and whatnot.
One of the best songs in Jesus Christ Superstar is that one. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a massive part of the Jesus story. So yeah. It's so strange that entire aspect would be removed. So like you said, God isn't. Yeah. So God didn't know that was going to happen. He allowed it to happen, even though God, Jesus was sent Oops. There specifically. Oops. Oopsie. Yeah. He was playing, God was playing chess with the devil that day. Wasn't paying attention.
Yeah. Oops. Yeah. I'll let my kid die.
It's like, oh crap.
Oh man.
I'm going to wait 2000 years to send someone else. I'm going to think this over.
Yeah. Also, another thing that really breaks, is that Joseph is not Jesus' father. Jesus, well, Mary's husband. Well, or God isn't really the father of Jesus.
Really? Is that one of their tenets as well? What do they say? Yeah,
that Zechariah, the father of John the Baptist, was also the father of Jesus. Now, Zechariah was married to Elizabeth, and Elizabeth was a relative of Mary.
Mm.
Like all Old Testament stuff, the guy's screwed around a bit.
So wait a second. So they say Zechariah was the biological father of Jesus. So
yes.
Jesus wasn't divine. Wasn't divine birth.
Well, they're trying to, this is how you winnow in and kind of say that your own leader is the true Messiah.
Mm. That's interesting.
You bring down the previous Messiah to raise yourself up.
Right.
Zechariah is pretty much praised in Christianity and in Islam. So he's a significant figure. So it was a safe, a safe person to kind of move the fatherhood to.
Right.
It's like, if it can't be God, Zek, let's give it to him.
That's interesting, because do you know anything about the story of Moon's birth, or not his birth, his conception?
No.
Because see, all these divine figures, like Jesus is his conception is the Annunciation. A lot of people think it's the Immaculate Conception. They confuse that. The Immaculate Conception is the conception of Mary, and Jesus's conception is the Annunciation. But even in Korean religious figures in the past, there's Wonhyo, the Buddhist monk Wonhyo. It's said that his mother had a dream that of a shooting star flying into her chest,
which we covered in a previous episode. Yes,
right. Yeah. And then Buddha, his mother dreamed that a white elephant entered her side, and and things like that. So I wonder if there's a conception story surrounding Moon.
There were conception stories about the North Korean leaders.
Right, right. So, interesting.
Mm, this is what is so fascinating about this, is you find so many connections.
Right, right.
So the divine principle is three parts. First, God, it's about God's purpose is a purpose in creating people, then fall, then redemption. Those are the three things. So creation, fall, redemption. And the Unification Church is really concentrating on how to redeem. How to redeem. And it's an indemnity, which you kind of say is kind of like a penance, we would say, in Catholicism.
Maybe, it, yeah.
Yeah, the way of making up for your divine sin. There are the three types of indemnity, of a way to pay back. One is equal, the eye for eye. So you find some way to pay back the full value of your sins. The other one is lesser indemnity, which is done through faith, baptism, or Eucharist. But the trouble with lesser indemnity, you need to do more of it in order to pay it off. You need to do it for a longer time. And then there's greater indemnity, which, I mean, you can get it done fast and in one shot. And that's like over the top stuff, like martyrdom. Yeah. That's a way to really get yourself, you paid off your debts, which goes against a lot of Protestant teachings, because Protestantism teaches, most of it does. I mean, there's some that don't, like Church of Christ, that you get salvation through grace. You know, the whole, do you accept Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior? That whole line is, that's supposed to, once you do that, you're good. You go to heaven, dude. You're all done. All done. Baptize. Okay. Baptize extra insurance. It's like, it's on top of that. It's like when you buy your iPhone and they ask, do you want insurance with that? That's the baptism.
Do you want Apple Care?
Yeah. You want that?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want baptism care? Yeah.
We're in such trouble for this episode.
I'm fine with that.
But the trouble with all this too was, with people focusing on indemnity, it focuses on the self rather than on God. And so it's a very self-absorbed type of approach to religion, which I think we see a lot of in lots of religions in Korea. It's a lot about how can I progress? How can I progress through the ranks in the church? A lot of the times, you know, it's all about, I mean, the spread of the coronavirus and the cult in Daegu, it was more concerned with, even though I might spread the virus, you still have to show up. Even if it hurts others, you still have to show up, because this is about my soul, not about their souls. And right. that's kind of was. It's like a very selfish, self-absorbed way of salvation. Also, there's a level of esotericism, kind of like keeping its subpart secrets, what they called heavenly deception. I love that one. That's some good words right there. They also believe, later on, they started talking about the unification of science and religion. We find this later on when Moon is starting to have a little PR issues. You find him doing a lot of stuff because of PR issues and always evolving the church to make sure the church is on top. So trying to find ways of making science and religion to go together. You might have heard this one before. Well, now you know where it came from. And they've made a book called Icons of Evolution, which promotes intelligent design. I think that was made in the late 90s. And yes, they're also known for the couple blessings, the mass marriages, or just the blessings of already married couples. In many cases, Moon would actually match the couple, play matchmakers.
Like days before.
Yeah. Yeah. And what this would do is, we talked about the family and the lineage, and we talked about the fall. And is how you redeem yourself is, okay, so Jesus couldn't make that family. Well, there's a way you can become a part of this sinless family that was cut off early, is by this couple blessing. You either, if you're married, you get blessed, or you take a spouse from the Unification Church, and now you're part of this new sinless lineage. Some notable blessings of 1982, 2,000 couples in Madison Square Garden, 1988, 2,500 Korean and Japanese couples in Korea. This is to promote Korean-Japanese unity. It's around the time of the Olympics. 1992, 30,000 couples in Olympic Stadium. I think that was the Guinness Book of World Records one. Also in 92, 13,000 in Yankee Stadium. You find that Something on the Moon really loves Yankee Stadium and Madison Square Garden. It's holding a lot of stuff in both those places. Loves New York. New York is kind of the international headquarters for the Unification Church, by the way.
That's his Nazareth.
Mm-hmm. And the view of sex is still celibacy. Very celibacy first, even after married in some cases.
And yeah, don't they have to wait like 40 days? That's the final test?
In some cases, yeah. Yeah, and then 40 days faithfulness. After marriage. Of course, faithfulness mm-hmm. after and during marriage.
Yeah.
Sexual faithfulness. Which is fair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because it's also believed that after death, your families and your relationships will still continue.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thanksgiving was tough. Yeah. So there's no reincarnation, but also there's no eternal damnation. So, okay. That's... okay. Good. Okay. Then after the death of Moon's son in the 1980s, he came up with the funeral ceremony, the Sunghwa. Oh, yeah. And there are three stages. First stage is private prayer between family and close relations, which is the Gihwan, returning to joy. Then there's the public ceremony celebrating the person's life in songs and in lectures. This is the actual Sunghwa, which is like the ascending to harmony and peace. And then there's the burial, which is the Wanjin, which is the returning home to the palace, which emphasizes joy and a light atmosphere. People aren't wearing black. They're wearing light-colored clothing. And also, cremation is discouraged. They try to, but trouble is in Japan, you can't be buried. You have to be cremated. So they try to discourage cremation. So that's the funeral ceremony. It's very positive, not sad, the funerals are. Celebrations of life. Now, there have been some, of course, in the island, there's some controversies. Sean, you want to tell us about Kara Jones?
I read an article. Now, if anyone wants to read this article, I can't remember which paper published it, but just Google Kara Jones, C-A-R-A Jones, and Kara Jones Unification Church, and you'll find her article. But she highlights how her parents were part of the church. They encouraged her. They were matched by Moon. Then they wanted their daughter Kara to be matched by Moon. She was somewhere in the States. She did get matched. She had to come to Seoul for the wedding, the mass wedding. And she had no idea what was going on. She wasn't really sure. She says how that after
like your average ESL teacher
when they right. Yeah. So she says, yeah. After the wedding, when it was done, they went out and they met her parents and whatnot, and they were married. And then she realized, she's like, oh, I wish this was different. And I wish this was, I wish my father had walked me down the aisle. Mm. I could have seen my mother shedding a tear of joy.
Yeah.
And just the cultural aspects of marriage that she would have grown up in, that cultural idea of marriage. But not only wasn't her, not being her cultural idea of a wedding, I think was fine. It was mostly that it was just this mass produced wedding, and she got married with thousands of other people. And then, the marriage started to fall apart within a couple of months. She started to drink. She eventually left the church, but it came at the cost of, being ostracized by her family, by the church itself. At the time when it happened, yeah, she was essentially just kicked out of her family. And that was that is the ultimate response of what we were saying earlier of leaving a church, of becoming an apostate. You become alone. But like she said, she was alone in the church. So the only difference was that she was alone out of the church and she lost contact with her family.
Yeah.
And all the friends that she had made. So
and people are like, why is it hard to leave a cult? This is why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I recommend everyone just Google Kara Jones Unification Church and you read more about her story.
Yeah.
It's pretty sad. Mm.
Because I told you all about all these cults that are happening in the 70s. So there's also anti-cult movements in the 1970s. Now, they end up being considered kind of extreme because they, like family members, like the parents of someone who was involved in a cult would pay a group to kidnap them and kind of de-brainwash them. What's it called? Yeah.
Deprogram?
Deprogrammers. The deprogrammers were big in the 1970s. I've read some of the books of some of these deprogrammers. Yeah, but then now that's been kind of debunked because even the American Psychiatric Association says, yeah, cults, they're not really brainwashing. They're just giving really good arguments.
Manipulating weaknesses, maybe. I think that's
manipulating. But there's a thing of breaking people down and building them back up again. It's a method of doing that. A lot of the hardcore cults do that. I'm going to be controversial in saying that boot camp kind of does the same thing in the military.
Oh, of course.
The purpose is to break you down and break down who you were and build you up into a new person that conforms to its own code.
I think if you're training to be infantry, they don't want you to be thinking about your mom when you're sent in the front lines and like, wait, this isn't a good idea.
Yeah.
They want you to just go forward and shoot. That's why pawns in chess only move forward.
Yeah. It's about breaking down your character and then rebuild the character according to its values, which if you want to say that's brainwashing, I think it's not brainwashing, but it's similar to what cults have done. So because of all this, the Unification Church, the Moonies got to be lumped in with the Hare Krishnas and all these other cults in the temple,
Jim Jones.
They got associated with them. So you'll find from now on, this is the active Moon going into PR mode and going to spin mode, because he started getting focused on, especially in New York City, because he started creating all these political organizations, which I'm about to go into in a bit. But in 1982, Moon was convicted of tax fraud and ended up serving 13 months in prison. So again, he's in prison. But he had made so many connections at that time that people like Jerry Falwell and the leader of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference were all lobbying to get him out of prison.
Really? Jerry Falwell was lobbying. Yeah.
Oh, Jerry Falwell is very involved with Moon.
Yeah, Falwell's another fraud. One of my favorite, one of my favorite quotes about Jerry Falwell was after he died, when Chris Hitchens said, "If Jerry Falwell was given an enema, you could fit him in a matchbox."
Took me a while to get that one.
You could bury him in a matchbox.
Christopher Hitchens, he was so full of shit.
Yeah.
So rather than going with the whole missionary thing, the public thing, they went back to what's called the home church movement. And one goes back to the hometowns and they try to proselytize by acts of good faith, being involved in charities and just, you know, hey, look at me. I'm a good person. Wow. Look, Bob's a really good person. I wonder let me get to know Bob better. And then through that, it's kind of a soft missionaryism, soft evangelicism.
Evangelicalism.
English language is really evading me right now. And so because of this, the PR changed the name to the Family Federation for World Peace and Unification. Now you're going to find in all these organizations that Moon is creating, the words peace, federation, or unification are usually used in each one of these. But this was a total rebranding. Moons finds out, decides that just trying to make a church alone is one thing. Now he's going for the Chabal thing. Trying to find all these associations, organizations that are loosely connected to him and his family to get control and to make change according to his worldview. So going through this rebranding, also making these organizations for political and media cover, sponsoring conferences, creating coalitions with other religious organizations, especially organizations that have been pariahs in some way or another, finding common ground with them. He's doing more giant blessing, all these giant blessing ceremonies. Even in 2000, the Million Family March. Remember the Million Family March? Along with the Nation of Islam, Louis Farrakhan. That was a Moony thing. Falwell was involved that. There was the Million Men March in the 90s, which also was religious. I want to talk a little bit of my personal background. I was loosely involved in that. I was involved, I think it was because of the influence of my dad. I was involved in one of the organizations. I was very skeptical when I was in it, though. But yeah, also a little bit of my background. In my teenage years, I was briefly involved in a cult, just so people know where I'm coming from. So why I might have, it might have painted my attitudes towards cults.
And I was raised Catholic. Raised Catholic.
I was raised Catholic too.
I was raised Irish Catholic in Newfoundland. So yeah, that's why I drink a lot.
Ah, my favorite part. Political influence. This is where we see them really influencing, becoming the Forrest Gumps of modern history. They started out as anti-communists for obvious reasons. Moon started, I mean, even though he started on the Communist Party, that was just for survival purposes, I'm sure. But I mean, when you can't go back home because of the communists, you get pissed off at the communists. And so he saw that anti-communism was the God versus Satan struggle. The communists were Satan. And he's behind a lot of the aggressive anti-North Korean activities. In the early stages, they were heavily funded by Japanese millionaire Ryoichi Sasakawa. 1991, Moon met with Kim Il-sung, ironically enough. And he also started the Tong-il Group. And if you live in Korea, you've seen the Tong-il Group. The Tong-il Group later founded Pyonghwa Motors in North Korea, North Korea's first car company.
Yeah, I had no idea about that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, this is...
And weird.
Yes. Really weird
and bizarre.
Now we're starting to see how they've been involved in history and in politics. During the George the First presidency, George H.W. Bush presidency, one of Moon's associate disciples, Dong Moon-ju, was an unofficial diplomatic ambassador to North Korea. He did diplomatic missions to North Korea for the first George Bush. They got heavily involved in U.S. conservative and Republican politics. I mean, it started off in the 1970s where Moon created a group to support Nixon during Watergate. And he believed that the at the time, agreeing with a lot of, this was around the time when conservatives started coming up with this, let's paint the media as being liberal. It's going to get controversial again. There's actually a memo that went around conservative circles in the early 70s saying, let's start saying on the record whenever we're being interviewed, talking about how the media is liberal so that the public will start being convinced that the media is actually liberal. So anyway, started News World Communications in 1976. This is very significant, for they started a significant newspaper known as the Washington Times. And also other newspapers in South Korea, Japan, and South America. So yes, the Washington Times, we called it, in my circle, we called it the Mooney Times. So in case you didn't know, the Washington Times, which its president was Dong Moon-ju, who we just mentioned was doing these diplomatic missions to North Korea under George H.W. Bush. But also they went under investigation in the late 70s because it's believed that the Moonies and the Korean CIA joined forces to gain political influence in the U.S. And the U.S. Congress had a commission that found this out. This is what I'm saying. This is not conspiracy theory. This was actually found out in government commissions. It was under a nonprofit group called the Korean Cultural Freedom Foundation. And members of this organization worked as volunteers in congressional offices where they had great influence over policy. There's another organization in 1980 called CAUSA International, which is an anti-communist education foundation. They sponsor lots of conferences for evangelical leaders, for Senate staffers, and conservative activists. They also did a documentary called Nicaragua Was Our Home, because this was the 80s, Nicaragua. And they also disrupted an anti-draft rally in 1980. This is what led to its controversial status, is like people saying, are you a religious organization or a political organization? A New York court said it was a religious organization. No, a political organization was not tax exempt, but the New York Supreme Court said, no, it was a religious organization. And it's stated as that. So for all of its political activities, it was tax exempt because of this New York Supreme Court ruling. So they use that to create more organizations, like in 1984, created the Washington Institute for Values and Public Policy, which is a right-wing think tank that underwrites research for seminars and institutions such as Stanford University and University of Chicago. So you will find that seminars at University of Chicago come from the Washington Institute for Values and Public Policy, which is a Mooney organization.
Fingers in it, everything.
Yes. And in 1994, this is the Gingrich Revolution. They were heavily putting money into conservative organizations. They were very much behind the religious right of the 1980s. And then the Gingrich Revolution of 94, it was heavily funded by the Moonies. All right. I know it's like, Joe, get off your tinfoil hat. But you'll find a lot of these people were involved, and it's in public record. I'm going to sum up really quickly. In the year 2000, they started another organization. They love creating these organizations. They're just trying to dissipate themselves. So the people can't trace it down because you can't say Unification Church. So they had to come with all these organizations. And by this time, they were making enough money to create new organizations to make more money. So the World Association for Non-Governmental Organizations, which has the fun acronym of WANGO, it was a right-wing non-government organization. It was a money funnel for right-wing NGOs, even though it was the World Association of Non-Government Organizations, the WANGO. It really heavily favored right-wing NGOs. In 2003, in South Korea, they created a political party called the Party for God, Peace, Unification, and Home. And this was actively involved in organizing group tours of the Middle East to try to promote Middle East peace. And then in 2004, inside the Dirksen Senate office building, Song Yong-moon crowned himself with the Crown of Peace. And it was attended by current U.S. and former congressmen and religious leaders. Yeah.
Madness. Absolute madness.
Yeah. In the Senate.
Madness. Daft. Unbelievable. Stunned. Yeah.
Okay. So this is the part you might want to push forward on this, because I'm just going to finish this up by naming every organization I could find that was directly created by the Unification Church. Are you ready?
Lord, pour your coffee.
Get ready. This is a 4-page list. Oh my goodness. Okay, get ready.
I'm gonna go to the bathroom.
Okay, but the reason I'm doing this list is this is where I think if you've heard of these, you might have had contact with these organizations.
Right.
Now you know. This is connected to the Moonies. Okay, first one. Collegiate Association for the Research of Principles, known as CARP, CARP. Family Peace Association. Notice peace is used in a lot of this. Universal Peace Federation. Women's Federation for World Peace, which focuses on the family. They contributed. This is their connection to Jerry Falwell, because Falwell supported Song Yong-moon. Payback was when Liberty University, Falwell's University, was faltering in 1995. The Women's Federation for World Peace, which is a Mooney organization, contributed $3.5 million to rescue his ass. Also that year, former President George H.W. Bush and Barbara Bush, former First Lady, spoke in an event of the World Women's Federation for World Peace at the Tokyo Dome. So they were speakers. Also, Dan Quayle was a speaker for another event that they held. Now, in George Bush's defense, they were not aware. He and his people were not aware that there was a connection between the Women's Federation for World Peace and the Moonies at the time. They weren't aware of that. Even though you'll find another big connection with H.W. Bush, with Bush Sr. and Song Yong-moon and Kim Il-sung. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing, too, is because of that visit to in 1992 with Kim Il-sung, Kim Il-sung gave his only interview to the Western press. Guess where? The Washington Times. Another organization, Service for Peace, created in 2002. International Conference on the University on the Unity of Sciences, which is the science conference I've told you about. Lots of interfaith organizations, the Assembly of the World's Religions, Interreligious Federation for World Peace, American Clergy Leadership Conference, the ACLC, which you've heard of, the Middle East Peace Initiative, which you've heard of, on the education front, and lots of stuff in Korea. Because I went to a English teachers event at one of the Moonee universities in Seoul, the Chungshim Graduate School of Theology, Chungshim International Academy, International Education Foundation, the New World Encyclopedia is from the Moonies. And not only that, it's an internet encyclopedia that tries to rewrite Wikipedia articles.
So using a slant towards them.
Yes. Paragon House, which is a publishing house. We know Paragon. The Professors World Peace Academy, the Sunhwa Art School, Sun Moon University, Sungyung Moon Institute, High School of the Pacific in Kealakekwa. Kealakekwa. I'm sorry. Hawaii.
Kealakekwa.
Thank you, Sean.
I don't know if that's right.
It's a high school in Hawaii. Unification Theology Seminary, UTS, UTS in Barrytown, New York. They also have an extension in Midtown Manhattan. Blessed Teens Academy in Greeley, Colorado. New Hope Academy in Landover Hills, Maryland. Even though they claim they are no longer associated with the church. WUF, the World University Federation. Also in the arts, they founded the Kirov Academy of Ballet Dance School in Washington, D.C. The Korean Cultural Foundation. Little Angels Children's Folk Ballet of Korea. Manhattan Center Theater and Recording Studio in New York City. The New York Symphony. One Way Productions Movie Production Company. And the Universal Ballet, founded in South Korea in 1984 by Moon's daughter-in-law, Julia Moon, who is still, was now the general director. She was the prima ballerina until 2001. She is now the general director of the Universal Ballet. So that is directly run by the Moonies. In sports, in Brazil, the Central Esportivo Nova Esperança Clube Atlético Sorocaba. It's a Brazilian football teams. Both of them. Martial Arts Federation for World Peace. Peace Cup International Football Soccer Tournament. Songnam Ilhwa Chunma. It's a South Korean football team. The Sun Moon Peace Football Foundation. The Yongpyeong Ski Resort. Is owned what by the Unification there? Church. It is owned by the Unification there? Church. The 2018 Winter Olympics were held at the Moonee Ski Resort. I've been to that. Yes. It's quite nice. Oh, by the way, yeah, the university I went to. Nice campus. It's pretty nice. On the political front, oh my gosh. Freedom Leadership Foundation, which is an anti-communist organization active since the 1960s. The International Association of Parliamentarians for Peace, the IAPP. The Conservatives.com, which was in partnership with the Heritage Foundation, who I used to work with. I used to work with them when I was co-producer for the Tom Hartman program, because the Heritage Foundation would supply us with guests for my host Tom Hartman to debate. Honestly, Heritage Foundation, the person I worked with at the Heritage was pretty cool, but the Heritage Foundation itself was founded by the Coors brothers as a right-wing foundation. Anyway, the Summit Council for World Peace, which is a unification group, again, Coalition for a Free World, an anti-Soviet group active in the 80s, Washington Institute for Values and Public Policy, which you've heard of, the International Coalition for Religious Freedom, which you've heard of, the International Federation for Victory Over Communism, the Korean Cultural and Freedom Foundation, National Committee Against Religious Bigotry and Racism, which sounds nice, the National Prayer and Fast Committee, which was what they organized to support Nixon during Watergate, and Radio Free Asia, which I'm sure you've heard of. Now, how do they fund all this stuff? Through their businesses, because, you know, after the 60s and 70s, couldn't really make as much money from teenagers asking for money in parking lots. So these funds from current church activities, also Pyeonghwa Motors, which you talked about, Chungcheong Hospital in Korea, the Ilhwa Company, which produces ginseng. You might have, we all know those companies, with those stores around Korea. The Ishin Hospital, which is a church, which is in Japan. Tong Il Group, which you mentioned before, which is kind of like a mini Chaebol. They're involved in manufacturing, pharmaceuticals, tourism, and publishing. They did have a setback during the 1997 financial crisis, which a lot of Chaebols did. This is a surprise for me. They started Master Marine, which is a shipbuilding and fishing company in Alabama, where I grew up. International Seafood in Kodiak, Alaska. True World Foods, which supplies much of the sushi in America. Again, we mentioned New World Communications, which owns the Washington Times, but also surprisingly, UPI, the United Press International, which is like, you know, the AP, Associated Press, and then there's UPI. Those are the, and then there's Reuters, the three major press organizations most local news get their articles from is from these three organizations. Tempos del Mundo in Latin America, the Seigye Ilbo in South Korea, the Sekai Nippo in Japan, the Zambezi Times in South Africa, the Middle East Times in Egypt, and they used to own a cable network called American Life TV. They also make a lot of money through real estate. They bought up a bunch of churches in the 80s, the Belvedere Estate in New York City, the New Yorker Hotel, the Roland Denny Mansion in Seattle. When they were going through all this purchase of estate in the early 80s, ironically, Donald Trump criticized them for disrupting communities. I'm going to pause a bit to let that settle in. Okay. Also, I'm still not done. More organizations. International Relief Friendship Foundation, Joshua House Children's Center in Georgetown, Guyana, which is a nice, it helps homeless and victimized children. I mean, like I said, this is not like, it's not black and white. They do some stuff that you consider kind of positive. It's complicated. The Korean War 60th Anniversary Memorial Committee, National Committee Against Religious Bigotry and Racism, the New Hope East Garden Project, which is an agricultural project in Brazil, Ocean Church, Summit Council for World Peace, the Tongil Foundation, World Media Association, which sponsors trips for American journalists to Asian countries. Some of our journalism friends might have taken trips through them. And now I'm going to list a few organizations that were sponsored by Unification members. So like the Unification Church says, we want you to send money to these people to support. These are our friends of the Unification Church. This would be the American Conference on Religious Movements in Rockville, Maryland, which fights discrimination against new religions, which is also funded by the Church of Scientology, the Hare Krishnas, and the Unificationists. And they give it $3,000 a month. The American Freedom Coalition, the AFC, the Christian Heritage Foundation, Empowerment Network, which is a pro-faith PAC supported by Joe Lieberman. Mm-hmm. We remember him. He ran for vice president. Foundation for Religious Freedom, also known as the New Cult Awareness Network, which is affiliated with the Church of Scientology and is trying to educate the public about religious freedoms. In other words, don't call us cults. Says Tom Cruise. Okay. Also, the connection, they heavily funded the George Bush Presidential Library. They gave $1 million. Washington Times Foundation gave $1 million to the George Bush Presidential Library. As mentioned before, they gave $3.5 million to Liberty University. They also support Married Priests Now. Interesting organization in Latin America, trying to encourage, let the Catholic Church let priests marry. Okay.
That's interesting.
The National Conservative Political Action Committee, NCPAC, and they heavily sponsor the University of Bridgeport, Connecticut, and they support the Dark Side of Soul podcast. I made that last part up.
Yeah, not just, the podcast, just the tour.
I'm just thinking, Sean, they're sponsoring so many people. We should just contact them. Dude, they got money flowing out their pockets.
Let's convert.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right. If you don't want, how about this? If you don't want the Unification Church to take over the podcast, join our Patreon at patreon.com/soulpodcast, Dark Side of Soul.
That's right. There you go. Perfect.
There we go. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for going through this whole thing. My voice is shot. So, yeah, if you want to support us instead of the Unification Church, which I'm not saying you couldn't, or you couldn't support both, or this Unification Church couldn't support us, join our tour, The Dark Side of Soul, at darksideofsoul.com. We also would like to support our music by Soraksan, S-O-R-A-K-S-A-N, which you can find as, what is it, Jeju Digital.
That's that's the label name on Bandcamp. Label name
on Bandcamp. We'd like to thank our top tier patrons, Angel Earl, Joel Bonomini, Jamie Staley, and Sharon Cullen. Join our Patreon. You get lots of extra stuff if you join our Patreon, starting at $5 a month. Top tier patrons, like the ones we just listed, get lots of stuff, including they get swag delivered to their real house addresses each month. We do a once a month Zoom conference with everyone where everyone breaks out their whiskeys and talks about ghosts and history. It's the cool kids table.
And I just launched. Yeah, I just say too. I just started a new series, Letters from the Dead. That's only for patrons, and I go through my vast resources of books and letters and anecdotes from antiquity up to more modern history of claims of supernatural experiences from around the world.
And that's only for top tier patrons.
No, it's for all patrons.
All patrons, okay. And also but Weird Tales from Korean.
And Weird Tales is for all patrons, but there's one a month. One episode a month that's public, and then the higher your tier level, the more episodes you get per month. Up to 4 a month if you're top
Which
tier.
Which are great. They're wonderful little sound bites. They're like little 10 minute episodes.
Yeah, usually 5 to 10 minutes.
Yeah, they're great. They're great. And if you just love Sean's voice like I do, you just listen to it and just fall asleep. Make a playlist of all of them and just they're your bedtime stories. Boom.
I don't know if my voice making you fall asleep is a compliment, Joe.
That is a great thing, Sean. That is a great thing. Think about voices that keep you awake. They're the most annoying voices. But voices that soothe you. Your grandfather, you know, voices that soothe you. Yeah, I think that's a great thing. Okay. And I love the idea of scaring your children to sleep by putting you on a playlist and putting next to sleep when they're going to sleep. Talking about like angry virgin ghosts, chopping off men's tallywhackers and stuff. I don't know. Let's wrap it up. Anyway, if you have any supernatural experiences in Korea, contact Sean. Sean, how can people contact you?
Just send us a message on our Facebook page, and we'll get back to you real quick. I'll contact you directly, respond to your message, and then let you know how to get in touch with me directly and talk about your experience for the potential inclusion in a book.
That sounds fun. Well, thank you everyone for listening and sticking with us the whole thing. Until next time, stay spooky.
Good night.